Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. This half hour on the show, there is a world that we can apprehend with our senses. We can see, feel, touch, smell this world, but there is a universe beyond our senses that is invisible to them but can be observed and measured with mathematical precision. My guest this hour, physicist Frank Wilczek, refers to the workings of this invisible world as nature's hidden harmonies. He says the senses we were born with are not attuned to these harmonies. He says the deep structure of the world is quite different than the surface structure we sense. This half hour, we'll talk about the basic structure and laws of physical reality, and we'll find out what is about to begin at the Large Hadron Collider near Geneva, Switzerland. It's a circular tunnel, 17 miles in diameter, where experiments are soon to be conducted, experiments which scientists hope will tell us more about the deep structure of the world. Frank Wilczek is professor of physics at MIT. He won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 2004 for work that he did as a 21-year-old grad student. His new book is The Lightness of Being. It is subtitled Mass, Ether, and the Unification of Forces. Frank Wilczek, welcome to Open Line in Columbus. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Very good to be here.
We're at 614-292-8513 or openline at wosu.org if you'd like to email a question. Frank, you write in The Lightness of Being, "When I was growing up, I loved the idea that great powers and secret meanings lurk behind the appearance of things, and I still do."
Yes. Yes, so, when I was a child, I loved the idea of magic, and I got lots of magic kits from my parents. Mm-hmm. But I was disappointed that it was all tricks.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of deception.
There were no real secrets there in that sense.
Well, there's psychological secrets, but not not secrets that allowed you to do powerful things other than trick people.
Right. So we, our senses can apprehend a certain part of reality, but there's much beyond that that we cannot see, but we can only measure.
That's right. Things that happen too fast or on too small scales just elude our senses. We were designed to avoid predators and find desirable mates and so forth. And in an environment on the African savanna 200,000 years ago, that's not necessarily what it takes to see the deepest aspects of reality and do justice to our mental powers.
When we think about matter, we think about this table, this pen that I'm holding.
Yes.
We can see one another. That's matter. But there's a lot more to matter than that. And there's something called dark matter, and there's something called dark energy.
Yes.
That are unseen. Is that right?
They're unseen except through their gravitational influence mm-hmm. on the kind of matter we do know about, what I call normal matter. So that's the stuff we're made out of. And the stuff that we thought was everything until about 20 years ago, the stuff that people study in chemistry and biology and astronomy until 20 years ago. But now, recently, the astronomers discovered that there's not enough of that stuff they see in their telescopes to hold galaxies and clusters of galaxies together. And you can account for what's missing by postulating new forms of matter. But so, at present, they're just postulates. Then they fix up a discrepancy between what we observe and what we actually what we observe with our eyes, so to speak, and what we observe with gravity.
You know? So the matter that we can see and maybe mm-hmm. even touch on occasion, that may be what, only 5% of total?
It's 5% of the total mass of the universe, right.
And the rest of the mass is this?
Other stuff.
Other stuff. That we,
which is at least two types, called dark matter and dark energy.
Well, so space as we know it, outer
yes.
space, as we look out into space, you could say is empty, but you could say it's not empty at all.
Oh, it's much more correct to say it's not empty at all. It's, in fact, Omar Khayyam talked about the universe in a drop of wine, but really the universe is in a drop of any piece of empty space you care to look at. The space we realize is full of things called fields that have spontaneous activity. They fluctuate. And the empty space can make the particles that we are constituted of. In fact, we believe that's what happened in the early universe. So what our ordinary perceptions perceive of as empty space, our best picture of the world now sees quite differently as really the fundamental seat of reality, very structured, very active, very powerful.
So what we perceive with our senses, this empty space, you say, is the fundamental?
Yes, I call it the grid.
The grid.
It's related to the old concepts of ether, but it's really much more. It's like the ether on steroids. We've learned that it has many properties that the old ether didn't have. I mean, it's like the old ether in that it fills all space, but it's spontaneously active. It's a quantum ether, so it wiggles and jiggles spontaneously. It contains different kinds of materials that can vibrate, and so it contains, for instance, what's called a sigma field that can vibrate and produce particles we actually see, the pi mesons. And we believe it has a kind of superconductivity that's vital to understanding why the weak interaction is weak. And so, well, I can't do justice to it here in a couple of minutes.
Sure.
That's what the book is about. But there's a tremendous amount of structure, and the deepest aspects of reality are already in empty space. Matter is kind of an epiphenomenon on top of that.
So if our eyes were so structured that we could see a wider range, if we looked into deep space, we would see all of these, what are they, force fields?
Energies that come and go. It actually, you can make fake pictures of it. You know, astronomers are very fond of making fake pictures where you put in false colors and so forth. So you can see X-rays, which of course you can't really see. But if you do that, what empty space starts to look like is a kind of lava lamp with fluctuations in energy that very rapidly come and go.
And what do these
structure on all scales? So it's also fractal.
It's like a northern lights that you can't see in a certain sense. I mean,
it's a northern lights that are too quick for you to see. You just see a sort of average, which is a blur, and that you're accustomed to thinking of that as nothing. But it's that the equations are smarter.
there are in some Asian practices. There is something called qi, universal energy that they talk about that you can bring into your body or move out.
Yes.
Is there any connection between that and what you're talking about?
Well,
are they? Are they
I don't know enough about qi to really pronounce it on that, but. It sounds encouraging, but I tell you what's out there, and then you can decide if it's qi or
all these force fields that if our eyes were so structured, we could see. What is their purpose? What do they do? What are some of the things they do?
Well, nowadays, the distinction between forces and things has kind of disappeared. That's part of the joke, if you like, or the message of the lightness of being, is that traditionally there's been a tremendous contrast in the metaphors of light and matter. You know, one is celestial, one is earthy, and so. But in modern physics, there's just one thing, and it's much more like light than it is like matter. Uh-huh. It's just more like the traditional idea of light than the traditional idea of matter.
But you said there's one. It's a unified field. One kind of fundamental force in the universe. Is that what we're saying?
Hope so. At present, we have four fundamental forces
that are
distinct. That's electromagnetism, gravity, and then the strong and weak forces, which were discovered only in the 20th century.
Called simply that, the strong and weak
just
forces.
Just called strong and weak, right.
Yeah.
All right. They're even less obvious than gravity and electromagnetism. They were only discovered in the 20th century and when people studied atomic nuclei. But we have beautiful laws for all these forces separately, and the frontier right now is to try to make a unified set of equations that describes them all and is prettier. Mm-hmm. And I think we have many encouraging signs that we're on the way to doing that.
So for a layperson,
yes.
What is the import of all of this? I mean, clearly you'd like to have a beautiful summary of all these forces or a unified idea. But for the layperson, what do we need to know about this?
Well, to me, it's like asking what's the purpose of music or what's the purpose of art. You can always ask what's the purpose of something. But specifically, in the past, people have talked about learning what God is, what the mind of God is, mm-hmm. and You know, one approach to that is to look at ancient texts and what people have said about it. Another is to look around and see what, you know, what God has put out there. Mm-hmm. And that's the approach that I follow, mm-hmm. that trying to do justice to what physical reality is. Mm-hmm. It's just intrinsically fascinating, and it doesn't disappoint, I guess, because when you actually do it, you don't find something boring or routine or unimaginative. You find something that you would never have dreamed of. Mm-hmm. Indeterminism, spontaneous activity, empty space is not empty, all this stuff that you would never have dreamed of, but people don't have good enough imaginations. But by careful experiments, you find it. So you learn this very imaginative fantasy is actually reality. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, that conditions the way I think about everything, you know, to realize how that you're part of this chi or maybe you're not, if maybe.
I mean, so you really, Frank, are you saying that the, by the way, physicist Frank Wilczek is with us from MIT, Nobel Prize winning professor of physics there. His new book, The Lightness of Being, it is subtitled Mass, Ether, and the Unification of Forces. We're at 614-292-8513. Yeah. You can email questions to openline@wosu.org. So as a layperson, let me see if I'm understanding this correctly. I mean, I can touch this table. I can see you.
Yes.
But you're saying even in this room, there are forces, there are fields operating all around us that we cannot sense.
Yes. Our sensory apparatus is quite crude. Of course, you're familiar with the idea that you can do better by looking with a microscope,
sure.
Or amplifying sounds with, or you know, in there are electromagnetic waves filling all space, like coming from radio stations that
certainly.
You don't sense unless you put out a radio receiver.
Sure,
so
sure.
We've carried that to tremendous extremes in modern physics. We realize that our senses are perceiving only a very, very small part of reality, mm-hmm. and. You know, we can enrich our senses both with instruments like radio receivers or microscopes, but also by using our noodles, mm-hmm. and that's really fun too.
So the mind is the chief perceiving organ in terms of these kinds of.
The mind is the ultimate perceiving organ, I would say, because it tells you how to use what the tools produce and how to make new tools.
So all of these things that we can measure, although not sense directly,
yes.
You say could be the workings of God. I mean, how do you have a definition
well,
of
let me,
God?
Well, let me – that's my definition.
That's your definition.
Let me ease off that one. That's – to me, I want to find out what's there, and then we can talk about the interpretation. And it's – you know, of course, God is a very flexible concept, and very different religions have completely different concepts, from a sort of big father to the abstract chi or nothingness. And so I don't even know what it means to say that we're seeing God, but mm-hmm. What I'm telling you is what's out there,
it is. I mean, God is not measurable.
When you ask what it's all about, the first thing is what it is, so that's the level I'm addressing.
So God is not measurable, clearly. So is there anything we can say about God?
Well, we can say that if God is operating in the universe, this is how he, she, or it, or they is working.
At least how it's working.
How it's working.
We can see
right.
how it's working.
How it's working.
614-292-8513 with physicist Frank Wilczek. Roger, thanks for waiting. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, I had a question. It's a great opportunity because I know this gentleman has studied reality in a very scientific manner, and I was just wondering, has he come to any conclusion as to what the purpose of our existence is from what he knows?
No. The purpose is, I guess what I've learned is that the fundamental laws are kind of abstract. They can be formulated mathematically, and they seem to also be very consistent in the sense we don't see interventions from any unusual causes, despite looking very hard. You know, causes that aren't captured in the equations, despite looking very, very hard. The equations themselves, but we don't understand really the depth of what comes out of these equations, and and even what we do understand is so unusual that it at least makes me think about the world in a different way. It makes me think that I'm part of a grand unified field that fills all space, and that will go on after my little body tires out, and so forth. So it informs the way I think about the world. It doesn't fit comfortably into any conventional religion, I suppose. Although the Eastern religions are closer.
Follow up question, Roger?
Good answer.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Frank. If this all of this knowledge informs the way you think
yes.
about yourself and the world, does it in any way change your behavior in the world toward yourself or toward others? Does it have any effect?
Oh, definitely. It gives me a very different perspective.
Mm-hmm. What, for example?
Well, little things don't agitate me so much.
Is that right?
Well, I try not. Part of that is, of course, growing up. But, it gives you a very different kind of world perspective, that the world is a very, very big place. Not only in size, but even each little part of it is extremely rich in structure and operates on principles that have their own internal logic and are very beautiful in their way. But the logic is not something you would have guessed based on everyday experience. So to really do justice to reality, you have to use your imagination and learn.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that this long view or this complex view allows you to relax a little bit about life, or not necessarily?
It helps.
It helps.
It's not a cure-all.
It's
but
not a cure-all. I want to ask you about this Hadron Collider near Geneva.
Yes.
Apparently, it's a circular tunnel in the Earth. It's 17 miles in diameter. Is that right?
And yes. Well, that's sort of the central element of it, of course, is a tunnel. But what's interesting is what goes into the tunnel and what comes out of the tunnel.
What is that?
So what in the tunnel, there will be circulating protons moving in opposite directions. So they're circulating around two beams moving in opposite directions around this ring a part in a billion or so of the speed of light. So they will have energies that we've never before had in a controlled way for protons. And then at a few points, they'll be made to collide. This ring is filled with magnets to guide the motion and and electromagnetic fields
to make sure the
motion accelerate goes. Them. And you don't want them going out, escaping.
So
you have to guide them around.
Yeah.
It's very... You have these extremely powerful magnets, 10 meters long, one after another. The tolerances are millimeters. Mm-hmm. So it's a fantastic feat of civil engineering and advanced electronics to get this to work. It's really our civilization's answer to the pyramids of Egypt, I think, but much better because it's driven by curiosity and not superstition, and the scale of it is not just for show. It's necessary to answer the questions we want to answer. So anyway, these protons will collide at a few points, producing densities of energy that have never before been produced on Earth in a controlled way many, many times. And it's quantum mechanics, so different things happen each time that you do the collisions. And that acts as a sort of, when you do very sophisticated image processing, what this is really is a super duper microscope. So it will allow us to investigate phenomena on smaller distances than ever before, and then things that happen much more rapidly than ever before. And we believe that the most basic laws in their simplest form hold between events that happen very close together in time and very close together in space. And so we're getting more closer to the basics here.
And now you'll be able to see them in a sense.
Yeah, we'll be able to reconstruct,
what's
happening under these new conditions. And we have some very beautiful ideas about how to enrich the equations of physics we have that introduce new phenomena at those shorter distances, and we're going to find out if they're true or not.
And is there any hope that this Hadron Collider will bring you something radical in terms of physics that's never been?
Absolutely. Not only hope, but I expect it to initiate a new golden age.
A golden age.
I think the ideas that are out there are really ripe. We've been waiting for this machine for 20 years. And it's just because it's such a gigantic project, it's taken that long to get it up. So there are ideas about unifying these four forces of nature that I told you about, mm-hmm. ideas about what the dark matter might be, mm-hmm. ideas about structure in empty space that's responsible for this kind of superconductivity that I mentioned. All these ideas will be tested critically at the LHC. So I would be disappointed if at least a few of them aren't right.
So this is pretty exciting.
It's very exciting, right? Yeah. It's what we've been waiting for a long time, and it's going to happen very soon. They've just finished the ring. Particles are now circulating, but only in one direction. Next month, they're going to start up going in two directions, and then there'll be collisions before too long. And, well, each step has to be carefully done so that you check things out and make sure it's working properly. You can't make a mistake with these powerful beams. It'll be in a year or two that we start getting decisive answers to these questions.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the beauty of these discoveries.
Right. We have accurate laws for these four different interactions. And they have their own beauty, but if you really examine them critically, given that they're describing the most basic operations of nature, they are maybe not as beautiful as they should be. They're kind of lopsided. Mm-hmm. But we have ideas for expanding the equations, making bigger equations that make them less lopsided. Mm-hmm. But, of course, if you have bigger equations, they have more stuff, more phenomena, more particles concretely. And those particles have to show up at the LHC.
All these concepts, is it possible for a layperson to understand them? I mean, after all...
Absolutely. All you've got to do is buy Lightness of Being.
Your book. And you'll understand
all. And read it, of course.
Physicist right. Frank Wilczek joins us, professor of physics at MIT, Nobel Prize right. winner. We should say his new book is The Lightness of Being, Mass, Ether, and the Unification mm-hmm. of Forces. So this is not beyond us. I mean, because some people develop, you know...
It shouldn't be. It's not meant to be. We're all humans together. And one of my heroes, Richard Feynman, the famous physicist, used to like to say that what one fool can invent, another fool can understand. And in fact, understanding after the fact is usually much easier than inventing it. So I've tried to make it as simple as possible and sometimes maybe even a little bit simpler. So I think people with a sense of humor and patience will be able to understand the world
be
a lot better.
Yeah. Okay. And let us go back to our callers. Hello, Jesse, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Actually, you kind of answered one of my questions. I was wondering how accessible it was to the layperson. I've read a lot of... I was a philosophy major, but uh-huh. when it comes to physics, I...
Well, give it a try.
I've read Brian Greene. I've read David Bohm. I've read... as far as like the unified field.
Good.
Ken
well,
Wilber,
my book is, I think, no more difficult and more correct than those.
You say modestly.
Excuse me?
Since these books are a few years old, I understand how quickly things move. So,
yes.
Is there any, since you said, you're kind of working on filling a void, which is what string theory was meant to do, was filling the void between quantum mechanics and general relativity. Is that similar to...
The ideas that I highlight in Lightness of Being are not inconsistent with string theory, but they're a different set of ideas.
No.
They attempt to unify the forces in a way that you can test experimentally. So I focus very heavily on things that can be verified in reality, either that have been verified or that will be critically tested, with specific suggestions in the in the reasonably near future.
Okay, Jesse, thanks for your call. Got to move on. A couple of minutes left here with Frank Wilczek. Harula is with us. Hi, Harula.
Verified in reality.
Harula, you need to turn your radio down, or you're going to hear us 12 seconds late, and you're not going to be able to follow us. I'll give you one more shot here. Harula, are you with us on the air? Okay, well, that's not going to happen. So we'll call this. We urge you to turn your radio down so that indeed you will hear us in real time. Of course, Frank, you teach physics at MIT.
Yes.
And tell me a little bit about how you perceive science education and scientific literacy here in the United States. I mean, as taught through the years, up through grade school and high school, et cetera.
Well, it's very uneven. Of course, we have a system of education that's local, and some schools do very well. Some schools don't. I was very fortunate when I was growing up. I grew up in New York City, and we weren't particularly wealthy, but we were in a school district where I had superb teachers and got an absolutely great start in life from the public school system in New York. So I'm very grateful. I know some people I meet students who haven't been so lucky. And another reflection of that is that at MIT, we're getting more and more of our students from abroad.
What does that tell you?
That tells me that we're missing an opportunity here in the States to do better by our kids.
That the science education is not what it could be.
Right. Which is a real pity, because not only from the point of view of our modern economy, which is based on science and technology, but also just culture. There's so much wonderful about the world that only becomes accessible if you have basic knowledge of science, and the more you learn, the better it is.
When did you first realize that you really wanted to be this person who measures and discovers and theorizes about
measure? I never really thought about doing anything else. My earliest memories have to do with adding big columns of numbers and trying to think about things and saving up and buying a telescope when I was 6 years old. So I was always obsessed with that kind of thing. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I was sure I wanted to do something that involved deeper understanding of the world. At first, I thought it was to be a magician. When I went to college, I thought maybe the most interesting thing would be to try to figure out how minds work. But a few days in a neurophysiology laboratory cured me of that.
It did, eh?
Well, I like to use mathematics, and the subject wasn't ready at that time. Maybe I think now it might be. So I knew I always gravitated towards things that used mathematics and somehow addressed big questions. So it was never a question of some epiphany that suddenly I changed course or knew it. Mm-hmm. That's always what I wanted to do.
And it is still endlessly fascinating for you?
So far. It's only getting better, yeah.
Not likely to change.
I don't think so. It's getting harder to choose among the different possibilities. All this ferment in the fundamental laws. There's also ferment in physics about really exploiting our much deeper understanding, even of ordinary matter, to make useful devices that will go beyond modern electronics, quantum computers. And then someday I really would like to return to my original obsession, which is how minds work. Mm-hmm. And now we have powerful artificial minds, and we have much more powerful insight into physical minds, and it's really interesting.
And we must go. Thank you for being here. Frank Wilczek, professor of physics at MIT. His new book, The Lightness of Being. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Listener-supported WOSU, WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.